Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're inviting our panellists to consider the outlook for China. In a year of leadership change at home and abroad, which developments will drive the country's economy and markets? What are the prospects for the yuan in 2017? And how will China balance short-term priorities against long-term transformation? Let's start with that question around leadership. Paul Donovan, Global Chief Economist at UBS Wealth Management, explains those developments in a year of leadership change, home and abroad, that will drive China's economy and markets.
What drives China's economy and what drives China's markets are not necessarily, of course, the same thing. The economy is not terribly exposed to exports. A lot of people think that China is some export-driven powerhouse, but actually it's largely a domestic-driven economy. Exports account for roughly 10% of the entire Chinese economy when we actually look at what value they add to the economy. So domestically, I think the issue is going to be about credit provision. It's going to be about the government's overwhelming desire for economic stability this year because of the domestic political events. And the Chinese government being what it is, I think they can achieve that domestic political stability. For the markets, though, there's a stronger international flavour, obviously the currency markets, but also the sort of companies that are listed on China's equity markets tend to be more globally exposed. And here we go into the murky realms of trade protectionism, trade wars, and everything that is going on there. So I think on the financial market side, we will see a lot of political noise coming from the international tensions, from what the incoming Trump administration is going to do in the United States, while on the domestic side, it's going to be actually fairly stable with the party keeping things on an even keel.
There are certainly some interesting sectors to zero in on, explains Hartmut Issel, equity strategist in the UBS CIO.
As we have seen in the last few years, that we see a gradual slowdown in the economy. I don't think 2017 will be different, although we're still talking about very, very respectable growth numbers, of course. So to put this in numbers, we're talking about 6.7% last year versus probably somewhere 6.4% this year. But some interesting developments underneath here. We think the main driver of this gradual slowdown this year will be property, which is already in the process of happening as a couple of the largest cities have started to cool the property sector a bit down. And we're seeing the first effects. If we just look at the recently issued pricing data from the main Chinese cities. So we think both actually sales as well as new starts, if you will, on the property side will slow down. We're already seeing the first signs of that. On the other hand, we believe the government, the authorities will counter that to some extent, at least with public infrastructure.
In terms of the developments driving China's economy and markets, consolidation is the watchword, according to Angus Grigg of the Australian Financial Review in Shanghai.
I think you've got to look at 2017 as being a year of consolidation once again in China. Now that would be very disappointing to many people because they probably think that we've had really 3 or 4 years here where the Communist Party leadership led by Xi Jinping has, you know, worked to consolidate their power and build on their the sort of power that they garnered in sort of late 2012. And I think that's going to continue this year because we have the changeover in the Politburo Standing Committee here in China, which is the top leadership body. And so that will happen in November, and up until then we'll see a fair bit of political jockeying, we'll see lots of horse trading, and finally in November, the new makeup of that Politburo Standing Committee will be revealed. And what we saw in the lead up to the last change in 2012 was that really any sort of big ticket reforms, even sort of the emphasis and focus on the economy, can wane a little bit. So I think, you know, 2017 might be a period where we see Xi trying to consolidate power, but also we see the economy potentially drift a little bit. So I wouldn't expect too much in the way of big ticket reforms or sort of long lasting, sort of visionary economic change here in China.
Yifan Hu, UBS China economist, shares her insights as to the developments driving the Chinese economy this year.
I think that for China this year, it's a little bit different from the other countries. It's a 19th century conference of the Communist Party. So I think that it's actually pretty clear that for the President Xi will continue its administration, although probably the member in the Standing Committee will change, but the overall structure will still be led by the President Xi. So given this also coming CPC, we think that this year for the economic stability will be the top priority for China's economy. So probably we could expect more structural reforms in the second term of the President Xi. But this year, I think that it's definitely the priority will be the economic stability supported by the fiscal policy as well as the monetary policy.
Let's consider China's currency next. What are the prospects for the yuan in the next 12 months? This question is complex and remains all about capital outflow, explains Angus Grigg again.
If we see a surge in capital outflows, not only in January but also in February, then we could see the Chinese government panic again and really try and clamp down on capital controls. And if that happens, we would see the march towards liberalisation slow a little bit, and it's already slowed sort of quite markedly in the last year or so anyway. So I think the idea that we're going to see more freely floating Chinese yuan, I think that's probably misguided. I think we'll see strong intervention by the People's Bank of China to keep the yuan relatively strong, despite what Donald Trump would have us believe. And I think, the big fear from the Communist Party here is that you have a massive or a very rapid depreciation of the currency, which leads to, a foreign debt crisis for many companies in China. So they want to avoid that at all costs. And so I think we'll see a pretty stable yuan for most of the year, maybe trending a little bit lower.
What are the prospects for China's currency, according to Paul Donovan?
China's currency is likely to weaken a little against the dollar this year. The fundamentals of the currency would argue for some weakness. The renminbi does look somewhat overvalued against the US dollar on international standards. Now, bear in mind, of course, the Chinese authorities use a reference basket to judge the value of their currency, and that reference basket is a large number of currencies. In fact, it's just widened as of the 1st of January this year to include currencies like the Korean won. However, most of the capital outflows that are coming from China at the moment, and which the authorities are trying to control, are coming out because middle-class investors, some smaller businesses, are trying to diversify and get money offshore. Now, that's important because these investors don't really deal in the abstract basket that the People's Bank of China actually monitors. When these people think about the value of the yuan renminbi, what they're thinking about is its value against the US dollar. And so that makes the dollar renminbi exchange rate still the most relevant, even though China formally pursues a basket.
Is capital outflow still the thing to look out for from Yifan Hu's perspective?
We expect the CNY will continue to depreciate by 3 to 5% in the coming 2 to 3 years, mainly due to the capital outflows. So I think the capital outflows in China is due to the structural factors. Currently, for the GDP per capita in China is about 8,000, 2 to 3 years is about 10,000. So I think there is a strong demand for the households to diversify their assets globally, for the enterprises to probably for the merger acquisition and globally, and even for the government, they also have the target of the One Road, One Belt. So under this kind of environment, and we expect that for the capital outflow pressure will continue. As long as we have this capital outflow pressure, we expect the Chinese yuan will continue to depreciate.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at the reform agenda in the year ahead and canvass our experts for their tips and what else to look out for in China in 2017. Now, several of our panellists have already mentioned reform. So how will China balance short-term priorities against this longer-term transformation? Here's Angus Grigg again.
Well, the issue really is that the start of 2016, all the signals were that the Communist Party here in China was prepared to let the economy slow and bring about the big transformation from a an economy driven by fixed asset investment or building stuff to one that was driven by consumption. And at the start of 2016, there was a very good prospect that that was going to happen. But then what you saw was the party panic, and they really saw that growth was slowing very, very quickly. And so they went back to old habits. And that means they pumped huge amounts of credit stimulus into the economy. And you saw the old economy here in China take off again. And the best reflection of that is in the price of coal and iron ore, which have had tele years in 2016. Now, I think we're going to see a continuation of that in 2017. Where maybe some credit will be gradually drained from the economy because there are fears of a sort of big debt crisis here. But, you know, we'll see a moderating of credit. But I think it will still be the same story here where you have relatively strong industrial production, you know, relatively strong retail sales, housing prices, in an effort to stabilize the economy. And now, after that, and after we see the leadership transition, people are talking about 2018 might be the sort of window for reform here in China. So, you know, people said that maybe 2014 might be that window. Didn't really happen. So now we're looking to 2018.
How does Hartmut Issel think that China will balance short-term priorities with long-term transformation?
What we observe is that the actual commitment towards reforms and rebalancing, both from the President, Mr. Xi, and also, of course, Prime Minister Li Keqiang, remains very, very strong. And we have seen a number also of, in some cases, painful action, such as capacity cuts on steel, other raw materials, coal, for example. Those actually cost jobs, and this is not an easy decision to make, and yet it has been done because it was felt necessary. So I think the general thrust is intact. Also, we're seeing very recently, over the last couple of months indeed, a new emphasis on SOE reforms, so the state-owned entities, things like mixed ownership, participation programs for employees, that equity swaps, all these things that are ultimately geared towards higher profitability, lower use of debt as well, are happening. We have interestingly seen a revival of those. So also here's some evidence that the appetite or the will, shall we call it, for reforms hasn't really abated. And then last but not least, generally speaking, there is also will to open the capital account further.
We put the same question to Yifan Hu. How will China balance these twin challenges?
So this year we expect that China will continue its orderly deceleration. So that means we expect the GDP growth will slightly decline from 6.7% last year to probably 6.47% this year. So we know deceleration is mainly caused by the structural reforms and also property downturn this year. So this year, because of the headwinds of the property side, so we think the government will probably more apply the fiscal policy to support the economy. In terms of the structural reforms, that probably will cause the short-term pain, will benefit for the long-term gains. So, but this year, I think that for the Chinese government, we're not seeing they're not doing reforms, but the reforms will be very mild, and their focus will be probably to stabilize the economy, to make a smooth transition.
And here's Paul Donovan's take on how China might be expected to strike the right balance.
The challenge for China is that the model of growth that has been very successful for China over the last 20, 25 years is clearly not going to work over the next 20 to 25 years. The advantages of being a low-cost economy, a labour outsourcing centre, have long since gone. But more than that, global trade patterns are shifting, supply chains are gradually becoming shorter, and China is not going to benefit from that process. Moreover, China's stage of economic development requires that it moves from what economists call dynamic growth, which is simply throwing more labour resources, more capital at the economy to engineer growth, and into what we call innovative growth. That is to say, where you actually achieve economic growth through productivity, through new ideas, better ways of doing things. China's education system doesn't really encourage innovation. China's political situation doesn't really encourage innovation. And that's going to be quite a problem. The risk is, of course, that in any period of transition, there are always people who lose out as old ways of doing things are cast aside, basically. And that can create short-term instability. The Chinese authorities keep trying to maintain short-term stability, and they will do so again this year. But the risk is that when they do that, they lose sight of the medium-term objectives in the interests of preserving the political and social status quo for just another year.
Next up on the programme, we asked our panel to share any other themes, factors that might shape this space in the coming months. Trends in monetary policy will be well worth keeping an eye on, says Yifan Hu.
So this year, I think for the China CPI will continue to rise mildly to 2.5%, so it's pretty low. And the PPI inflation will also enter into the positive territory, but it's also relatively mild. So we expect the monetary policy will switch to be more accommodative, to be more prudent. So I think therefore the fiscal policy will remain supportive to secure a growth target. However, at the same time, monetary policy this year, the target is try to avoid the credit crunch for financial stability. So this year, we think the PBOC, the central bank, will be very cautious. So we don't expect any interest rate cuts because of the rising of the inflation. We also don't expect any interest rate hike because I think the China's economy is continuing deceleration.
Angus Grigg, meanwhile, provides a final thought on political insecurity or instability and the role that this might play.
Now, the chances of that are probably small, but I'd say there is an outside chance that you could see major political disruption here in China this year as we lead into the big leadership transition at the end of the year. And, you know, we saw that in 2012 with the Bo Xilai saga and where the sort of various factions were fighting each other for power. Now, there is a, as I said, a small but, you know, not totally dismissible chance that we may see something similar here. And I guess from the economy's point of view, if that were to happen, then we could see the party take its eye off the ball in terms of the economy, and you could see growth, you know, slow reasonably sharply if there were to be, you know, a degree of political uncertainty here in China. And often, you know, many people here will tell you that the biggest risk to the Chinese economy is not the housing bubble or the debt crisis. It's a political risk. It's a political crisis is the risk here. And so that's what people will be looking for towards the end of this year.
And finally, is there anything else that we should be mindful of? Well, here's a view from Paul Donovan on China and its relationship with the United States of America.
With all the complexity about the trade relations with the United States, in which China certainly seems to be on the defensive, it's worthwhile remembering that China does have quite a lot of power over the United States as well. The US can impose tariffs and sanctions, of course, but China has a large amount of foreign exchange reserves, and roughly $2 trillion of those reserves are held in US assets. The ability to threaten on the capital account side as a counterattack to any increase in tensions on the current account side is something that could take place. A lot of people say, well, that will cost China money and the value of their reserves will fall. But central banks don't think about reserves in that way. Foreign exchange reserves are held as a political weapon, not as an asset to generate a future income stream. And so to that extent, I think that China may be prepared to retaliate in the capital markets if the Trump administration goes on the offensive in the trade markets.
And that's Paul Donovan bringing us to the end of this 120th edition of the Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via your preferred platform. Don't miss next week's programme, where we reflect on the World Economic Forum in Davos and consider a UBS white paper on sustainable development goals. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.